Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Drunk Women will be downing Prosecco at this year's Edinburgh Fringe. You can see them from the 3rd to the 11th of August, inclusive, 7:20pm at the Underbelly, Bristow Square. Tickets are now on sale at underbellyedinburgh.co.uk.
Drunk Women Solving
is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanour and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Anything gynecological, just no. Sorry. I really went there.
He referred to aliens as that mob up there. Amazing.
You're not going to waste bullets when you can just burn women.
I now want to be the toothless sex worker.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
We are joined by the fantastic writer and broadcaster, Sally Hughes.
Yes!
Woo! Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Hooray. Please, can you tell us, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Several times. I'll take out the dark stuff. There are a couple of weird ones. So when I was a kid, I was raised by my father. My mother left. This is happier than it sounds. So I was raised by my father and we had a babysitter and we were burgled Ooh. By some bad boys she'd fallen into company with.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Our house was burgled and they were so stupid that they stole a 3-pack of Banjo chocolate bars, which were popular chocolate bars in the 80s, and they replaced them with a family pack of Kit Kats.
What?
That literally happened. So you know those kind of two-finger Kit Kat strips that you get in the supermarket?
Yeah.
We didn't have them, and they put them in the fridge but removed our Banjo bars.
That's so weird.
So
why
my dad came
them?
Home and was like, Jesus, what's this? And the police were kind of taking fingerprints and stuff, and we found these Kit
Kats. For the Banjos?
Yeah, for the whole house.
Oh, okay.
They'd stolen, like, stupid stuff, but basically they'd stolen some chocolate but given us some other chocolate.
That's so weird.
There was that, and then...
And was that an upgrade? Because I didn't grow up with
that. No, it was a downgrade.
Oh, a
a downgrade.
It was a downgrade.
But the replacement is, it's kind of adorable.
That's like a sassy little swap.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And then 1 year on New Year's Eve, I went out with my friend Julia and we made the fatal mistake of going out on New Year's Eve, which one must never do.
Yeah, horrible.
One must never horrible. Do. It cannot end well. And of course, we couldn't get taxis. Of course, we couldn't get home. And so we got the night bus and then a gang of boys kind of started talking to us and we ignored them and then they mugged us on the way home.
Oh, no.
And then, but then, so we had to, they took our keys and everything, so we couldn't get into the house. So we ended up going to the police station and going around to Julia's sister's to sleep. And I was in my club clothes.
Yeah.
And I was put to bed in a child's bunk bed because it was kind of 5 a.m. And I woke up in the morning in my miniskirt and my kind of lycra body. This was the 90s. And then had mascara all down my face. And I opened my eyes and there was a very elaborate Meccano structure built around my head and a child with a pure, like, shit, I'm busted face on because he had built a massive construction around my head. And then there was the sinking realisation as I opened my eyes and saw his face that I was lying in child's piss.
Oh my God.
The worst day. So I lost my favourite pair of jeans, which were in my overnight bag, a load of tips I'd made working the door at a club, slept in piss, had Meccano built around me.
Not your piss?
Yeah.
How drunk were you?
I've got an exceptional bladder control, I have to say. Yeah. I've got good bladder control. Maybe it's because I'm too uptight. I don't know.
I'm confused by, I don't mean to, like, you know, labor around the piss details.
Yeah.
Do you think you were so drunk that you got put to bed and it was already there?
Yes.
Or did this kid? Okay, because I'm picturing him building and I'm like, well, I can't take a break. Got the construction site here, so I'll just have a little whiz.
No, he'd pissed the bed. I had fallen into his bunk bed in a heap, depressed, sad, tearful, because I was really skint at the time. I was really young, had no money whatsoever.
Yeah.
I had been put in this bed at kind of 5 a.m. as he was getting up. He'd already pissed in it. Right. I fell asleep. I woke up in a puddle of child's piss with Meccano being built around my head.
That is,
wearing
that's
a
the worst New Year's.
Tiny mini skirt. And
what year
no
had
money.
It just turned into? And was this a premonition for a very bad year?
I think this was New Year's Eve 94.
Okay.
Wow,
so I was 19.
Okay.
It's better than the millennium, isn't it? That's not where you want to spend your millennium. That's like, that was such a big night.
It's like the start of a film. Like, that's the beginning of the film. And then by the end, everything's brilliant and you have a great career. But that's like the before shot. Like, I need to make a change. I'm waking up in child's piss.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's the bit where they turn Amy Schumer into an alcoholic for having one glass of wine, isn't it? It's one of those scenes.
Yeah.
And yeah, they never found them and they never found my stuff. It was quite bleak, but it was so bleak that it makes Julia and I hysterical to talk about it now.
Wow.
It was just so completely awful. It's hard to imagine a more sinking feeling than that. Anyway, the moral here is do not go out on
New Year's Eve.
Unless it's to a friend's house.
Yeah. And book your taxi in advance.
Book your taxi
or make
in
your
advance.
Spouse stay sober.
Yeah. Yeah.
We do this thing where we ask people what they would say if they had the perp now.
Are we talking
Sorry,
the child?
Yeah.
The child or the guy that mugged you? Like.
So you have multiple perps. I'm really doubling down on the word
Yeah,
perp.
I barely scratched the surface of my criminal history.
Oh,
but yeah,
should
yeah.
we do a few more?
Oh, go on. What should we
go? Oh, no. Like, all sorts of stuff. I've been mugged, attacked, flashed, all sorts of things. And they've always kind of led to quite strange situations. I seem to always come into contact with crime. It's very bizarre. I've had to call 999 a few times
really?
In my life. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite exciting.
Can you tell us one of the calling 999?
So when I lived in Streatham, so only about probably 18 months after the piss bunk,
piss bunk gate.
I was on my way home on a 159 bus to Streatham and a man was just being massively creepy and just... was sitting next to me, even though there were loads of empty seats, and I kept moving, he kept moving. And then I got off the bus and he followed me off the bus. And so I found a phone box and I dialed 999 and said, you have to get me home because I'm just terrified of walking up my street. And they did. The police came and they gave me a lift home and they scared him. And they were great. As soon as he saw the police car coming, he ran away.
Wow.
But my experiences of dialing 999 have been wholly positive, and my experiences with the police in adulthood have been...
Well, that's reassuring to hear, because in the last podcast, we had a terrible police story where they did nothing.
Yeah, it's nice to have a bit of balance.
This is nice to flip it and be like, okay, we might be safe if we call the police.
I deal with the police quite a lot through my charity, Beauty Banks. And in my experience, they're exceptionally helpful and working under nightmarish conditions.
Oh, well, yeah, with all the cuts.
And, they have a terrible time. And actually, that when you get talking to them day to day in their day to day operations, they're actually really progressive and on our side.
Awesome.
They're just under massive bullshit pressure from government and PRs and
stuff. Yeah. Cheers.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
The crime that we are about to discuss takes place in London, England. I know.
She looked at me like, I don't know where I fucking live. Like, maybe 10 years ago, I didn't know where that was. But now.
Just because it could be a trick in a different London, but it's this one. Okay. On the morning of the 13th of November, a person is crossing the street from their home in Cheapside to attend Mercer's Chapel. They never make it to the chapel.
Okay.
Instead, they are shot.
Sorry, said morning?
Yes, it's the morning.
Very important. Very important.
Yep. It's morning. He's about... Oh, shit.
You're not supposed to have told us it was he.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's all right.
Well, okay. That's just one last question. This person is crossing the road to get to the chapel. They never make it to the chapel because they are shot with a gun and killed.
Ooh.
I can tell you. This incident...
Sorry, I made that sound like, ooh. I meant like, ooh,
like
rare.
You're turned on by it.
What kind of gun?
Just because it's so much rarer here, so it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, I just feel at home.
And Cheapside, is that that's East End?
Yeah,
it's the city, isn't it?
City, it's kind of between Bank and St. Paul's.
Uh-huh,
It's shiny street area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can tell you this as well. This incident is considered to be probably the first murder with a handgun in London.
Interesting. What year again?
Well, that is my next question.
Oh, okay.
First murder with a handgun in London.
What year do you think that happened
in? Oh, good gracious. 1927.
Okay. Any
advance? No, it'd be earlier than that.
When did they first...
Or am I throwing people off?
When do they have handguns? Did they have handguns in, the First World War? I'm trying to think of that those videos and stuff of the people.
So the definition of a handgun is a gun you can operate with only one hand. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need two hands.
Yeah,
to
not a shotgun, a farm.
Yeah. Not like
I really don't know when they were invented. I'm proud that I don't.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Glock model came out in 1897, trying to take our rights.
I don't want to be that guy.
1875. I feel like people would have liked guns for a long time.
I feel it was 18 something. Yeah. But I don't. Oh, God.
Okay.
I think you guys are right.
People are like, I'm fed up of having to use two hands to kill people. I just do it with one.
How am I supposed to eat my sandwich and take somebody out?
You guys are all very wrong.
Oh, no. Ooh. 1974.
1536.
No!
What?
So is it like a kind of musket vibe?
Well, yeah, it's some
the
kind
hand
of...
musket. Nice.
Some kind of pistol or something.
Oh,
but
of course. As soon as you say pistol, I'm like, yes, pistols at dawn.
The dueling pistol.
So old. Okay. I really was picturing Magnum P.I.
No, but you're right. It's the dueling vibe.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
But yeah, really, Shakespeare doesn't get born for another 28 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what we're dealing
Amazing.
With.
Amazing.
I can't wait to hear how they describe women in this case. Really nice.
That was going to be my question. I was going to be, do you think the first victim of a handgun is male or female? And then
I would have guessed male anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you're not going to waste bullets when you can just burn women.
Burn them
now that we know. Also, there's loads of time to catch up on those figures and then exceed them 100 million times
over. Oh my god, so true.
It's early yet.
It's early. There's everything to play for. I just feel like because this is so long ago, it's 1536, I feel like we should just maybe get a bit of like local colour flavour to just set the scene a bit. We don't even have Shakespeare yet. It's the old St. Paul's because the new St. Paul's didn't get built till 1666.
Yeah.
I just thought, just for fun, I'm going to ask you guys, who is the monarch at this time?
Oh, good God. Oh, mate. Like Queen Elizabeth the something.
Queen Elizabeth I is 3 years old.
Oh,
moment.
So I was in the ballpark.
Yeah.
I literally am going via Blackadder.
So Henry VIII?
Yes.
Yes.
Well done.
Does anyone want to take a guess at which wife he's on?
Jane Seymour.
Correct.
Whoa! I didn't even know that was a wife. No, I did. I've heard Detective Hughes. This is exactly why we brought you here today. So, she's got specialised skills in the area of history.
And only just too. So we're in the November of 1536. Mm-hmm. In the May, he's had Anne Boleyn executed. The next day, he gets engaged to Jane Seymour. And then 10 days later, they get married. So he's a real romantic.
He loves Jane Seymour, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
She's the one.
Right.
Yeah.
The old romantic. She's the one.
This one's going to stick.
Yeah. Find yourself a man that'll execute his wife for you.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
I mean, he doesn't really have anything to do with this. I just thought I'd set the scene.
No, we're that's in, interesting.
That's good. Because Henry was like fucking about with stuff. So this is the murder of Robert Packington. And his murder was also later interpreted as martyrdom. Am I pronouncing that right? Martyrdom.
Martyrdom.
Martyrdom. Thank you.
You want to hear how I say it?
Yeah.
Martyrdom. Fucks it right up, doesn't it? Martyrdom. I don't really have that accent. Martyrdom.
So, question. What do we think Robert Packington did for a living?
Well, he's got to be quite important, hasn't he, for somebody to... I mean, unless he was caught in crossfire. Yeah, well...
Oh, is he the victim?
Oh, he's the victim.
He's the victim, sorry. We're looking for the perp.
Because if someone's, like, assassinating him, which is what it kind of sounds like.
You have to think so, yeah. And, okay, so is this part of London at that time not very nice? Is this kind of... Should I take the Cheapside label literally? Because now Cheapside is like the nicest part of any city.
No, I think at this stage it's a shithole.
It's a shithole, right?
I would think it's a shithole.
I took the liberty of Googling Cheapside. Mm. And it doesn't mean anything to just being cheap. It's an old Saxon word for market.
Cheap. Nice. Oh, I love these. See?
Yeah.
This is fun.
But
we're learning.
Trading area.
Oh.
Actually,
and he lives here. And he's on his way to church,
so he,
basically.
Yeah.
So if you like to, for someone to expend a bullet on you, you would need to be important.
Yeah.
You would need to be like a threat or there would need to be a serious beef.
Yeah.
You're not going to be a kind of wooden tooth prostitute, are you? You're going to be like a person of note.
Yeah.
I feel. Robert Packington, a wooden tooth prostitute.
Yeah, I love that. Animated series.
Okay. So he's important. What do you think?
Well, is he something to do with the king? Is he like a guy in the court or the parliament or something?
Is he something to do with the church? Is he a high up, like, bishop?
Like a cleric.
A
wooden tooth cleric.
Has. These are all good guesses.
Why is a prostitute the head of the Church of England?
Is he something to do with money, like a banker or financier?
Yeah, do you know what? You've all kind of sort of got, basically, yes to all of you. So he was a London
Don't
merchant.
Don't humour us.
No, because it's
You're
like,
all winners, kids.
But like if I go no, you'll go no. But right, so he was a London merchant and a member of parliament.
Okay.
Oh, so money.
They were multitaskers.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the church though. Well, I was the most wrong.
No.
Let the record show.
That comes up.
Okay.
But I can't tell you about it yet. So he started out exporting cloth and importing various wares for a company called the Mercer's Company. And they were one of the 12 great livery companies.
Livery.
Thank you. It's good that you're here.
So this is why we have a guest. It's just for pronunciation.
Do you know things? Help us out.
Clever. Yeah. 12 livery companies of London at the time. Fun fact, there are now 110 livery companies. Mm. At this time, there are 12.
And that, just in case the listeners don't know, that refers to the trade of cloth. I mean, is that what a livery? I've never really known what that word means.
I Googled it and they're like a really ancient modern trade association guild. So they kind of help make the laws of how you're going to trade.
Okay.
And they write up
how... Okay.
They're like the transport of trade and industry kind of vibe, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're kind of the bureaucracy and admin behind making rules for how you're going to trade, and they do charitable... Right. But one of
It's one of those words you like run across. I'm like, yeah, I know what that means. Please don't ask me to define it ever.
Yeah.
But I kind of get it.
So they played a significant part in city life. And made rules for how all the different professions would interact with each other. Did charitable giving, and they also, they had like voting rights for sort of senior civic offices, for like they could choose who the Lord Mayor was and stuff. But one of his jobs was to draw up articles on behalf of the Mercers for presentation to Parliament so they could get these made into laws and stuff. And he was one of the people that was asked to do this. He was asked to do this in 1523 and then again in 1529. And he did it with other people, but he was one of the main ones. And the one of the articles that he drew up in 1529 was considered by one source I saw to be sharply anti-clerical.
Oh.
So he's
throwing shade 16th century style.
Yeah. He's making some enemies. But he's doing really well at his job. So in 1528, he was elected warden of the company. And then he got elected to Parliament in a by-election shortly after this. So question, what year do you think he got elected to Parliament?
Well, I guess it's, what was it, 1629?
Well, we're in the...
1533.
Yes. Yeah.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Look at me. Look at me guessing shit.
October 1533.
Yes, October. I was going to say October. Because they all are... In October.
And then he was re-elected in 1536. So he got known for certain views in this new job. What do you think those views were?
Anti-clerical.
Yes.
I guess.
I mean, I'm already gutted that he's dead. Like, I feel like he had important work to do that we could do with the legacy of right now.
Yeah.
So he wasn't religious particularly, or didn't allow religion to be instrumental in politics.
Well, it's complicated because at this time, Henry VIII is making all these sweeping reforms.
Yes.
So the Protestants and the Catholics are all kind of really fighting each other.
Mm-hmm. Destroying some very nice stained glass along the way.
Bit of burning.
Yeah. A lot of priest holes. I've got a quote here. The chronicler Edward Hall records that in Parliament, Packington again revealed anti-clerical sentiments, speaking somewhat against the covetousness and cruelty of the clergy.
Mm.
Wow.
So it's
a slightly anti-corruption ticket, really.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I was just going to say, is that the equivalent to separation of church and state? That he was against the church having any say in governmental issues? And at this time, they basically have a hand in everything.
Yeah, that's definitely one aspect of it.
Yeah, so they can vote on.
See how quickly the American has gone to this theory. I just don't know how you got there so quickly. How it just tripped off the tongue.
Final... We don't have these problems.
In the final years of his life, Packington even directly reported to a certain famous historical figure of the time.
Joan of Arc, right?
You can all guess, and then I will give you a really fun clue.
Is it the guy... Wait, say the question again, sorry.
When you say historical figure at the time, are you saying that person was already historical to them?
So the person to them is famous and important.
And currently.
And they reported to them?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not Baby Elizabeth.
Is it the guy that Danny Dyer's related to?
Yes!
He is, okay. Dyer's great-great-great-great-granddad.
That was my clue. Danny Dyer is related to him.
So it's Thomas Thingy, isn't it? Thomas.
Which was surely the greatest moment of television.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine the production team? How much they must have just been jizzing as they realised that Danny Dyer was actual royalty.
So good. And my favourite bit is when he's talking to the really posh person that he's distantly related to, and the person says Thomas Cromwell was a controversial figure, and Danny Dyer goes, oh, a bit like Marmite, was he?
Danny Dyer is the best kind of funny, because he's funny both accidentally and on purpose.
Yeah.
And the funniest people are funny accidentally and on purpose. It's like the perfect, perfect balance.
I remember he did a show about aliens, and he said that he referred to aliens as that mob up there. Amazing. Yes, Danny. Right, so Thomas Cromwell.
Yeah, so so Robert Pakington, before he died, was directly reporting to Thomas Cromwell on matters in Flanders at the behest of Cromwell's man of business, Stephen Vaughan, who held strongly Protestant sympathies.
Mm.
Okay. On the morning of the 13th of November...
Love a bit of Flanders. Love it.
I
can't not go there.
On the morning of the 13th of November, 1536, while crossing the street from his home in Cheapside to attend Mercer's Chapel, located opposite, Pakington was shot with a gun and killed. And I have a quote from a source here that says, "And one morning, amongst all other, being a great..." Sorry, obviously it's Old English. "Being a great misty morning, such as hath seldom been seen, even as he was crossing the street from his house to the church, he was suddenly murdered with a gun, which of the neighbours was plainly heard, and by a great number of labourers there standing at Soper's Lane end. But the deed-doer was never espied nor known."
Ooh.
Wow. So this is a cold case.
This is a really comes
so
up freezing
like a grassy
case.
Knoll situation.
Yeah.
When you read from that era, it just sounds like Yoda to me.
Yeah.
A little Yoda.
But I think this
That's
case.
That's my witty interjection.
This has been cold for almost 500 years, but I think we can crack it wide open.
But still cold.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. So on, who are our suspects?
No pressure, guys.
Wow.
Are they still alive?
There are some suspects. Their murder was never found, despite there being a great reward for information.
This is a busy time of day, surely.
Yeah. Like church must have been like, and church must have been a big thing.
Everyone's going to church. It's a market. People are just turning a blind eye because they're scared of whoever did this.
Possibly. Yeah.
Also, they're like, how'd they get that handgun? Those weren't invented till 1927.
Crazy. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
But that still happens now, right? People just won't talk. That must have been the case. People would have been terrified.
We did a case once about this town whereby this guy was such a shit that people, they basically, the town went vigilante and someone killed him in front of everyone and nobody ever said who killed him. So what was I guess we've got to think about what the kind of the vibe was from the public.
Well, and this is pre-Robert Peel and the establishment of the Met or anything like that. So the way of policing would have been so different anyway. Yeah. They wouldn't have been structured policing in the way we know it now.
Not your nice 999 experiences.
No.
I would be terrified of everything back then. Like, everything just sounds terrifying. Like, there's no order unless you can buy your way into stuff.
People are literally shitting in the street.
Yeah. I mean...
That's the bit I'd look forward to, though. I'm always getting caught short. So I'm just like, oh, I can just do it here. That's cool. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, Hannah. See, if I had to poo in the street, I would literally never poo again and something would perforate and I would die. Because I'm repressed.
And that's just the difference between Hannah and Sally.
Two women, one nutshell.
And it really stinks because Hannah's... Anyway.
No, I would cease to exist. After I had my first baby, they were like, it hasn't been 2 weeks. That's not physically possible. I was like, oh, yes, it is. Oh, yes. Don't be silly. You underestimate me. Definitely been 2 weeks, and I'll give you another two.
Oh, wow. So I think we solved it.
Yeah, well, I can... Do you want me to tell you the list of suspects?
Yeah, no, please.
Elizabeth I, 3 years old, owned 10 pistols.
Sorry, that's libel.
Murder was interpreted by the Protestant reformers as martyrdom, and it became a source of religious controversy. In 1545, the Protestant reformer John Bale suggested that...
What? Just your little... it's fine.
It's because I secretly
burped. You just had like a... Yeah, I'm sorry. I laughed at your secret burp, and I apologize. That's the level I'm at right now.
That's cool. He suggested that conservative bishops were behind the murder. A similar suggestion was made in 1548 by Edward Hall, my source from before.
And I think in 2019, Taylor Glenn suggested a bishop.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Yeah. Bishop's Pistols, my favorite brand.
And they also attributed it to the Catholic clergy. This other guy, John Fox, held the clergy responsible, but in the process of doing so, proposed a contradictory theory of the crime. In 1559, Fox claimed that John Stokesley, a former Bishop of London, had paid a priest 60 gold coins to carry out the murder. But in 1563, Fox stated that John Innocent, a former Dean of St. Paul's, had made a deathbed confession, which he admitted to arranging for Packington's murder. So this Fox guy is kind of claiming all sorts of different...
Yeah. Also, things. Deathbed confessions, I never buy them.
I agree with you. I think in a way that's a form of martyrdom, isn't it?
It's yeah.
Kind of saying... Here's my incredibly noble acts on behalf of the church.
Yeah.
I like coin guy for the crime.
Ah, yeah. That guy. Okay. Much more motive, actually, with the money. And yeah, it feels like...
I feel like there's a nobility in organised religion in taking the flak.
Right.
And I feel that well, we know from the Catholic Church to jihadists, or that there is a nobility in saying I committed the awful crime.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure I entirely trust it.
Okay.
Coin bloke seems like he's got cause.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that definitely checks out.
Also, I think if you're a bishop as well, you've got like a lot of cloth, so you are hiding that pistol. That's easy, isn't it? Like, you've got all of the doobries, so you can just whip it out, bosh, whip it back under.
Yeah.
Yes,
just
true.
On a fashion level.
And given, granted.
They made a choice to do it. I mean, we're assuming it's a busy time. I think we're right on that. What was the time of the murder?
Just morning. That's all
we
I've
just
got.
Know it's morning.
But didn't it say in the bit where there was an eyewitness, the eyewitness said there was loads of people around?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
the
there were people around.
The choice to do it when there's a crowd, to me, is very interesting, rather than like killing him in his sleep or finding him late at night.
Because people
like,
heard it too, and it would have been a more unusual sound.
I mean, surely.
But I also think that at that time, the popularity of the church would mean that the best way to hide in plain sight is to be a cleric of some kind. Surely, if everybody's gathering to go to church, what's the best thing to be in that situation with a gun is a cleric, because you're meant to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And as you say, like, just whipping it out under the cloth.
Uh-huh.
Nothing happened here. Go give a sermon. Boom.
Yeah. Is it wrong that I'm aroused by the picture painting?
This has got flashes of
Fleabag. It's become slightly sexy. I now want to be the toothless sex worker. But I'm into it.
Don't say that about yourself. You've got wooden teeth. You have those wooden teeth.
See, that's my fear of living in the olden days, the teeth.
Yeah.
Oh, so much.
Or to Americans, just British people's teeth. Yeah.
Like. Anything gynecological, just, no. Sorry. So I really went there.
There are some counterpoints to this. The Catholic Apologist, which that's a fun title.
It really is.
It didn't occur to me you could be a Catholic apologist until I literally read it here. But people going,
sorry.
Oh, just like, it's not that
bad. I mean,
bad.
That's basically the Pope's job, isn't
it?
That's basically what he does full time.
Absolutely.
Sorry about the raping, but.
We're working on it.
So he said that Fox was slandering, you know, the Catholics, and he released a book, I think, in 1570. Oh, no, and then in response to him, Fox said in this another book, claiming that Packington's murderer was an Italian. So he changed his theory again. Oh, and some other accounts, these chroniclers, John Snow, blah, 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 Richard Grafton. We don't need to know.
Sorry, did I hear John Snow? Now I'm really confused.
I think you said really aroused, because John Snow would get it.
He has every right to that throne. That's all I'm saying.
See, I'm aroused by the thought of John Snow, the newsreader, not the I'm more interested in him.
Oh,
Also, like, imagine, like, bringing out a book in those days. Like, these days you can self-publish, easy, got a book. But in, like, the 15th century, like, I'm going to bring out a book. I'm going to fucking, like, you're bankrupt yourself.
Yeah, and, like, no one can read.
Yeah.
Also, your right hand's going to give way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you're having to write the whole thing longhand.
It would take so long.
This is pre-printing press.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's crazy.
So this other counterpoint slash this other suspect. So this guy, Raphael Hollinshead, put forward an entirely different version of events, claiming that a felon that hanged at Banbury had confessed on the gallows to Packington's murder as well. So we have another death confession.
Sally is
but
not.
But Sally is suspicious of that too.
I'm not having that because I'm not having that because pretty much when you look back at these things, first of all, it's nearly always a Johnny Foreigner who is blamed for something
right.
in this kind of slightly Brexity.
Yeah, blaming ancient, an Italian.
Yeah, there's always seems to be an Italian or a Spaniard or something who's done the wrongdoing. Mm. Secondly, as my learned colleague pointed out, a deathbed confession is not that reliable. It seems like a romantic, noble, grand thing to do.
It's only because
I feel it was somebody in the church. Don't you?
Well, yeah, and also I think that deathbed confessions is because they're thinking one day someone will talk about me on a podcast.
Yes.
They want to be remembered. Like.
Also, how easy is it to pay somebody who's about to be hanged? You're the bishop.
So much for
pay their family, because obviously they can't spend the money.
Yes.
I confess it right before you go.
And also
and I'll give your
yourself...
wife a shinny. Yes. What are they called?
And
a shimmy shake.
Make your pointless, meaningless life of note.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bishop, I can picture this fucking bishop.
My my suspicion is always with organized religion, I'm afraid. That is just my instinct in life.
Yeah. Okay.
I will be hard pressed to argue against that.
Well, you've basically answered my last question. I was going to say, do we think the Catholics did it or someone with a political motive? It sounds like we think the church did it.
I mean, it certainly doesn't feel like it's just a felon that's like, I'm going to shoot someone. Oh, I've shot a controversial MP who has said, like, imagine that. It's definitely a deliberate thing,
Sorry,
isn't it?
So for the American and anybody who's listening, Henry VIII established the Church of England,
mm-hmm.
but it's not established at this point. So we are talking, when you say anti-clerical, we're still talking about the Catholic...
Yeah, it's the Protestants trying to... So basically, the Protestants and the Catholics are kind of fighting for power.
Right.
And in theory, the Protestants are seizing power from the Catholics.
I know this is late in the game for this question, but I know I can feel that there are people that appreciate
so
that I'm asking this.
This guy is in a position of power to get laws passed that help Protestants mm-hmm. and hurt Catholics.
Do you know what? See, I wasn't thinking of it that way. That's why I said, like, the separation of church and state. I thought this guy was just anti... Don't get religion muddled in this at all.
Well,
I was like, so could a Protestant have killed him?
I don't think being completely non-religious is an option at this point. Like, I don't think you can live your life and just be like down with God.
You
can't do that. Because you're like a heathen and will be killed.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
But you're one or the other.
Yeah.
You're like, you're
this
a Catholic.
This is 1500 or Mississippi right now.
They were trying to take power away from the Catholic mm-hmm. Church.
So there's more motive there.
Yeah, so they probably are trying to not separate church and state, but separate British or English Parliament or whatever mm-hmm. it was then. God, my history is shoddy. But separate that from...
Really? You're saying that in front of me?
from the Catholic, from the Vatican. So they're making their own laws separate to... They don't have to pay all their taxes or all everything back to Italy.
Yeah.
So there is that.
But also there's a problem with the fact that Catholicism historically has been the pauper's religion, and so people are on board with Catholicism.
Yeah.
So your subjects are on board with Catholicism, and it's a huge sea change required in the country.
Yeah, it's a huge sea change, definitely. And people were seriously devout and upset, like, it wasn't just like, oh, fine, I'll say whatever. There was a real kickback.
Guys, you've just always been so busy over here.
But the Catholic...
We're just building, you know?
They had much more sort of ceremony and stuff, whereas the Protestants were...
Well, because there was this huge effort to not
appear that way, right? Like, don't look too religious because that's, that's very
but
Catholic.
But also, can I just say, though, still to this day, Catholicism is just the best-looking religion. It is.
It's like best-looking.
Yeah, it's fit. Like,
the
it's got, like,
of it.
The aesthetics the of it are really good. Like, the clothes, the windows, the stuff. The churches, like the stuff is
Jude
good.
Law
it's attractive.
Jude Law
they've got the incense, young they've got the blood and wine,
they've got the good candles, they've got the good statues. Like they have got the stuff down.
Aesthetically, it's a great religion.
Yeah,
The first time I saw the Vatican, that's right, I've seen it more than once, but I really wanted to. I'm on this tour bus and I'm like, I want to just be nonplussed. I want to be like.
It's
there's
amazing.
So much damage done. And I was like, oh, fuck off. Like, this is gorgeous. It's just...
It is just gorgeous.
Stunning. It's out of this world.
Protestants, on the whole, I think it's fair to say, Protestants don't have an eye for aesthetics, I would say.
No, because they were...
They're not the most stylish religion.
They were deliberately trying,
I
weren't they?
I think that's
to,
all right to say.
You need to write this article.
Of all the religions, I would say that Protestants... Presbyterian, Protestants, Church of England. We're not the most stylish.
You don't immediately go like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, geez. I don't know why I'm saying we. I'm an atheist. But, like, but it's the least stylish branch of religion. Yeah. Like Judaism and Islam and Catholicism. They're like, and Sikhism and Hinduism.
Stuff.
They're like, they look good.
They've got,
they've got
some
the stuff.
Beauty
so
going
true.
On.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is great.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well,
there's no hand wringing in a prayer cap and a blackened church. Like, it's really depressing.
I love ranking religions by like stylishness. That's brilliant. That's great.
It's literally all I got for you. That's all I've got for you.
That's great.
Well, you know, guns don't kill people. Organized religion kills people. So I think we solved it.
I think we did.
Yay, cheers.
Hey, let's all become Catholic. We threw the church under the bus.
Drunk women solving crime.
We have time now for our listener crime. And this was written in on our last live show, one of the anonymous slips of paper that we got from a member of our audience. And it says, our landlord has a few thousand pounds on our gas meter. Don't know if it's criminal, but he told us not to worry about it. Which sounds quite dodgy.
What does that mean? So they've moved in and the gas meter is already high?
Yeah, so they've got this gas meter that they presumably would be having to top up. Like, I used to live in this flat where I had to do it with electricity. And like literally the lights would go off because it was like
and you'd have to go to the shop
we had to go around to the shop. Yeah, it was sucked. So they've got this with a gas meter and it's like preloaded with a few thousand.
So it's preloaded with loads of money.
Yeah.
And so theoretically they don't have to top it up, but they're going through the motions of topping it up.
Yeah, or they've got free gas. And I mean, it does sound like it could be some form of money laundering. I don't understand how.
It does definitely sound like that. But what I would do, speaking as a journalist, so as a deeply cynical evidence-based person, what I would do in their situation is I would take a photograph on their phone of the meter, and that photograph will be date stamped.
Yeah.
So if there's ever any comeback for them, they have a date stamped photograph of where it was early on in the proceedings.
That's a good tip.
Maybe just a little selfie. Get yourself in there as well.
Yeah.
So be like, here's
today's
my flat.
Paper. Yeah. Pound coin for scale.
Sally Hughes writes about religion and style. Yeah, whenever a landlord says don't worry about it, that will keep me up
nights.
I
agree.
Yeah. It's like, what's he involved? Like, what's that scam? How is that?
I agree. It's something, I don't like the sound of it.
Yeah.
I'm immediately going to like hydroponics and like, what are they growing in the loft and why is there such a surplus of fuel payment?
I always remember
I
my
have
friend
many questions.
Lived next door to this house and it snowed, and on snow day, there was no snow on their roof and every other roof, and it's because they had a weed farm in there, and that's how they were found out.
Oh my god, they got
amazing.
Caught.
Yeah, they got caught. Yeah.
Oh, that's quite interesting, isn't it? So I wonder if the police knew that would be a giveaway and did a helicopter, because the police do that a lot with helicopters to find hydroponic.
Oh, really?
So they detect heat. Sensitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so
I wonder if when there was heavy snowfall, the police were like, all right, today's the day. Let's find some weed farms.
Well, I mean, they could, and you could also see it from the street because everyone was like, well, that's hilarious. Because I don't know what that is. Yeah. I worried about heat sensitive like helicopters because like when I've had a few drinks, I get really hot and I worry that they'll be like, I think there's a weed farm in there, and they'll be like, it's Hannah in bed. That's
it's hydroponic Hannah. Yeah.
Like a superhero.
Oh yeah, I don't like the sound of that.
No. And you just feel like, is someone gonna come for this? Like, give me my gas money? Like, I don't know how there would be anyone knocking on the door.
But yeah, the landlord could turn at the end and be like, you're not getting your deposit back because you spent all the gas money.
Yeah.
Get a picture ASAP and send it on an email to yourself so it's date stamped.
Yes.
Or maybe to us so we can tweet it.
I remember living in like the first flat in London. It was terrible. I'm pretty sure it was an illegal flat. Like things were just wrong with it. And you're like, I'm just grateful to have a bed. And that's when I first started dating my now husband. And then we just did like, we technically like gave our notice and everything, but we kind of just fled.
A moonlight flip.
We did a bit of a moonlight flee. And I just remember like the bed was terrible, but there were 800 pillows. And I just remember stacking them up this bookshelf and we're like, okay, bye. And then months later, and I don't even know how she got our address. One of the many roommates we had, they're like, we finally got our gas bill. We're just wondering if you can like chip in. Oh, and wow. It was like $4,000.
Oh my God.
It's the worst.
Everybody there used these because the heat didn't work, but everybody was using these little space heaters and just like very weird stuff going on. And we're like, fuck that, man. Like, I didn't even.
No.
Yeah.
How did they find out? I had that with a phone company where one of the phone engineers was tapping into my telephone number and calling all over the world for several hours. And every couple of months, I would get a bill for like £6,000.
Whoa.
And
every single time the bill came, I got cut off because I would call them and say, this isn't me. And they'd go, fine. And then they would just cut me off. And then I would spend a month getting put back on. And I had to explain to a new person in the call center every time. But it's really common apparently. So engineers just kind of tap in. So if they go into any, you know, the little units in the street.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the technical term is, but they open the little box in the street and they can basically make phone calls that last hours long to anywhere.
Oh, I wonder what they're talking about. It's kind of like, you know, when you have long chats on the phone, it's kind of nice. I mean, it's not £6,000 now, but...
Yeah, no, literally thousands and thousands of pounds.
Wow, so crazy.
That's another crime I've been a victim of. I mean, I've
got
Sally, be careful out there.
I'm like a fucking jinx. Any moment now, someone's just going to bomb this man. Yay!
Oh, that escalated. Having your phone hacked. Yeah.
I think taking a photo of it and just like keeping careful records.
That's sound advice.
It'll be date stamped.
Always sound advice with any landlord.
Okay. We solved it!
Yay!
Cheers! Wow, and I think I understand Henry VIII now.
Sally, what are you up to? Is there anything you would like to plug?
Well, I've got my usual stuff. So I write columns for The Telegraph and The Guardian. And then my new book is about the Queen. So that's like...
Oh, that
is good. So my fourth book comes out next year. But this third book is like a funny little palate cleanser, sorbet of a book, which is about the Queen and the hidden codes in her clothes.
Oh! Like the Brexit hat?
The Brexit hat.
Awesome.
And the Donald Trump jewellery.
Oh,
and
my God.
And the subtle trolling by the Queen.
I love this.
Oh my God, amazing.
And what the Queen does with her handbag and the different codes. It's all really interesting.
Oh my God.
So it was
so
I have a real soft spot for the Queen in that well, you know, she's quite repressed and proper, but she would kill a man, which is basically, I can't think why I'm so drawn to her. But I love her. I've loved her my whole life. Yeah. I think she's amazing. And I am really fascinated by the fact that she's a person who can say nothing and yet says everything.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
In a stealthy way.
And what is it called? When is it out?
So it's called Our Rainbow Queen. Ooh. And it's really cheap for one of my books. Normally they're like £30, but this book is like £9.99 or something.
Okay.
And it's available literally everywhere. And It is out May the 30th.
Oh, wow. So soon.
Yeah. And I'm doing talks at the V&A and lots of TV and press and stuff for it.
Fantastic.
Okay, yeah. So it's out now.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
This is the future.
It's out now. Literally today, this is recorded in real time.
Oh, that sounds great.
So it's literally everywhere. It's in fashion stores and gay lifestyle stores and all bookshops and department stores. It's literally everywhere. And cool. It's a really nice, affordable one. So if you're going out to dinner with a friend, you can just pick it up for under a tenner on the way, which is quite nice.
Brilliant. Awesome.
Love it.
Yay.
Woo.
Thank you so much for coming in, Sally, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast and thank you for listening. Bye!
You've heard the podcast, now buy the merch. There's a full range of certified organic cotton t-shirts, jumpers and hoodies, all on the website. Just go to drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.